Conspiracy theorists of the world unite.
That's more than a theory with me. I'm a former conspirator.
PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to the bunker. It's April the 27th, which actually is the birthday of one of my friends back in high school.
Well, happy birthday, friend.
Happy birthday, Anne, wherever you are.
In case you're tracking, it's just past 8 o'clock bunker savings time, GMT minus 6. And
minus 5.
UTC minus 5.
Oh, yeah. It's so confusing.
See, because those GMs keep their T on savings time. So it's the UTs, the internet time, that we're always...
Not the ETs.
No. So it is confusing. UTC is minus 5, GMT minus 6. Central Standard Time, just big hands on the...
Mickey's big
little
hand
hands
is
on the 8.
That.
That's right. Out here in Red State America, that's what time it is. Well, welcome. We got part 3 of our interview with Jay Fields tonight. And we will wrap up the discussion we've been having, at least for now, regarding the case of Susan Lindauer.
Yeah, well, we have to visit that again because this is, well, it's just now going to trial. So In the next week or two, we should know a whole lot more than we know now.
Yeah, absolutely. Next week is the hearing at which it will be determined whether Susan Lindauer is to be committed to a mental institution and medicated against her will without trial. And by the order of a judge. Really, this should disturb each and every one of us, because if this can happen to her, somebody who comes from a family that is relatively well-blessed, I mean, her father ran for the governorship of the state of Alaska. She attended one of the five sisters.
I know.
Is it five sisters or seven?
I can't remember. I think five.
Yeah, Smith College, which is a very well-regarded school in the Northeast, and was a respected journalist, you know, worked for big city newspapers, was a top staffer for a senator from the state of Washington and a congressman. Mm-hmm. So she is somebody who has some connections and is comfortable walking in the halls of power. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. Her cousin was the right-hand man of a United States president.
Her second cousin, Andy Card.
Yes. And if a federal judge can put her away without trial, it can certainly happen to you or I, because neither one of us, and I dare say that most of you listening, don't have those kind of connections.
Not one of my cousins works in the White House.
Not one of mine either. In fact, got a couple cousins that don't seem to work much at all.
You know, speaking of the
White
House,
family history.
Speaking of the White House, we watched a movie last night that we're just going to say don't bother.
Oh. It was such a shame, too, because it held out such promise.
It did, and that's why we watched it.
Good
cast. It was
called
Shadow Conspiracy. Mm-hmm. Great cast.
Yeah.
And it just had so much promise. Charlie Sheen, Donald Sutherland, Ben Gazzara.
Sam Waterston. And the always excellent and underappreciated Stephen Lang.
Stephen Lang, who, you know, didn't say a word.
No.
Not one word through the whole movie, and yet his presence is very, very dramatic and heavy. It's just not well written.
No. No. It was just plot holes. You could drive a truck through.
But here's why we watched it, because the two writers managed to get big guns to appear in the movie, to help with the, you know, the production of the movie, all of the, you know, they had to have had a lot of money behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet these two writers disappeared.
Yeah.
They've done nothing else.
It's the only movie they've ever done.
Now, granted, it wasn't a very good movie, but I've seen a lot of movies that stink that have sequels.
Yeah.
And the people who wrote them go on to make more movies and lots of money. But these two people who clearly had deep connections with deep pockets just disappeared. So you have to ask yourself, in light of the stories that came out after 9/11, where we saw FBI and military men who were going to Hollywood to learn how to write scripts. Is there something that perhaps we should know about these two men?
Yeah, it makes you wonder. What was the point of the movie?
Were those pseudonyms?
Yeah, I don't know. I did a little searching yesterday. I haven't dug deeply into the history of the two writers of this of Shadow Conspiracy, but I couldn't find anything else on them. Everything that I found through Google, through Yahoo, you know, the other searches, were connected to this movie. So
the one funny thing about the movie is, again, don't bother. Really, don't bother watching it.
No.
It, the end, the one thing that happens in the end doesn't really connect with the rest of the movie, but what it leaves you with is we're all under surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
So if that movie had a message, I think ultimately that's it.
Yeah.
We are all under surveillance all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were tracking Charlie Sheen's character with a satellite, and yet somehow he managed to walk back into the White House when everybody in Washington was looking for him.
Huge potholes, yeah. But they made a big deal out of
the technology
with
which we can be tracked. Yeah,
a message movie, I think.
Yeah. Well, as long as we're talking conspiracy and we're talking about shadow government, there was a story that came out of D.C. today that really caught my attention, because we've talked about the secret government before, FEMA.
Mm-hmm.
The Federal Emergency Management Agency. And, of course, we talked about FEMA's lack of performance a lot after the disaster of New Orleans and along the Gulf Coast.
Yeah.
The United States Senate, or a panel of the United States Senate, has recommended abolishing FEMA.
I know that sounds ridiculous, but, you know, maybe what will happen, and I even make this comment in the story because I did post it to Watcher. You sent this to me today from work. Perhaps FEMA is simply going to undergo a change, because FEMA has become sort of too well known.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time when FEMA could have come in and been very covert in the way they took over during martial law. It's sort of like, you know, alien, you know, visitations. Everybody knows about them now. It's an open secret. So it could be that FEMA, that there's another organization that actually is going to do these things, and FEMA is going to morph into something else.
It's a lightning rod for conspiracy theorists, sure.
Yeah, it is. Well, and, well said. I could have said that in 2 seconds, but there, you said
well,
that.
You know, they mentioned it in the X-Files movie. The character played by Martin Landau, whose name was Kurzweil, made mention of it. In fact, I'm probably going to have to rewrite the God conspiracy now, because FEMA is mentioned and referenced
honey, I hope not, because the God conspiracy is actually, it really is in to be honest, book two of the Countdown series. And we're kind of hoping that can come out soon. So I sent an email to a listener today who wanted to know when this next book in the Countdown series was coming out. And I said, well, soon.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hope you don't have to rewrite it.
Well, we'll see. But the United States Senate, and it was a bipartisan panel, so we've got somebody behind the scenes who's got the Democrats and Republicans working in the same direction here, which, of course, is supposed to make us, the American people, believe that this is something that's really being done for our good, in a case in which both parties set aside their differences and worked together for the country, like the 9/11 Commission.
The 9/11. Yeah. You know what? If I wanted to be a conspiracy theorist, I could say that Brown was put in there specifically to muck things up.
Well, it could well be. The panel has recommended that a new agency be created. And that's what I wanted to get to here, because you did point out that it's probably going to morph into something else. Well, they've proposed a new agency called the National Preparedness and Response Agency Authority, NPRA, or maybe it'll be NEPRA or something like that. They always come up with stuff that, you know, it's got to have a nifty acronym, you know, NEPRA, FEMA, you know, whatever. So that will be the new, that if the panel gets its way, we'll have to work on that.
Mothra!
The General Accounting Management. Anyway, the panel gets its way. This will be the new FEMA. So FEMA will be dismantled. And of course, if it works out the way the Department of Homeland Security has worked out, it'll just be bigger, badder, and suck up a lot more money.
Yep. Well, you know what? Speaking of money, there is an outbreak of mumps going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised to learn that Merck and Company donated 25,000 doses of mumps vaccine. That's a lot of doses that they could have made money on.
Mm-hmm.
And Merck likes money, as do all big pharmaceutical companies. And I'm looking at this story, and there are many things about this mumps, quote unquote, epidemic that are really bothering me. And one of them, of course, is the big thing that at 6 months old or so, babies are required in most states to take the MMR.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those M's is measles, one of those is mumps, and one is the R is rubella. Why is it so many? Now, I can understand that there are some people, excuse me, who for religious reasons don't want to take that vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
But the vast majority are vaccinated. So why is it suddenly we're hearing, well, you know, it's only really works about 90% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Then if you've known this all along, why aren't these kids getting boosters in high school automatically?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, maybe this is a, again, thinking outside the box, maybe this is a way to open up a new market, you know, for secondary shots or booster shots, a booster MMR.
Well, I think that that very well could be. It also could be that there's something in this vaccine, this free vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really being conspiratorial.
That really is.
That this is some sort of a trial.
Yeah, and we don't have any information that that's
no,
the case.
Heavens no. I mean, yeah. Literally, I'm just throwing stuff against the wall to see if it sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And our wall is covered with stuff.
It is. The wall of paranoia. The other thing you've suggested, which makes some sense, is that this could well be just a new strain of mumps that's mm-hmm. going around.
Yeah.
And a disease that we thought was
eradicated
has come back, or perhaps was altered by somebody and released.
Well, that's the big question, if it's a new strain. And I do find it a little curious that it all traces back supposedly to two people,
mm-hmm.
two unrelated people who flew between them on 9 planes. And now it's all over the place. But that does go to show you, and this is true, this is not a conspiracy thing. Once something gets a hold, a virus can spread so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of you, you know, and I'm one of those who says, you know, maybe the stories are a little fear-mongering about, you know, avian flu overseas. But I'll tell you what, if a real nasty virus got on these on our continent,
mm-hmm.
it would be devastating. And that's where I'm going to the next story.
I think I know where you're leading here.
Yes, this Marburg vaccine mm-hmm. that is in the news today. I am boggled. My mind simply boggled by this because these scientists, reputable scientists, have taken a gene from the Marburg virus. It's a filovirus. It's extremely infectious, and it is very deadly.
Yeah, Marburg is basically Ebola. It's its first cousin to Ebola.
It is, and it's almost 90-95% deadly,
mm-hmm.
and especially if it's in an area where it just, you know, well, like overseas in Africa. It just mm-hmm. ran rampant over there for
well,
a while last
yeah.
year.
If you've listened to us for any length of time, you remember about a year ago we were talking about the Marburg outbreak in Angola that was getting no press coverage
at all, and people were hundreds were dying. They've taken a protein, a surface protein from the Marburg virus, and they've inserted it into a relatively benign virus and given that quote-unquote vaccine to some monkeys. Well, the monkeys still died,
mm-hmm.
but they lived 80 days instead of, you know, only living 10 or 12.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's bad.
Now, I'm not a biologist. Nor do I play one on TV. But if you're alive for 80 days, would you not be shedding virus?
Shedding virus the whole time, presumably. And that's
six
longer
times longer
to spread the virus. That's
yeah.
the thing about Marburg and hot viruses like that.
Mm-hmm.
They kill so quickly. You don't have a whole lot of time to infect other people, even though it's easy to infect other people.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, you find that these outbreaks burn out within a few weeks, if not a month or two. This kind of thing where someone could linger for mm-hmm. 80 days and then die, that's bad.
Now, this VSV, this vesicular stomatitis virus, which mm-hmm. is the virus that they modified with mm-hmm. the Marburg protein, surface protein, what is that virus? What does it do?
Well, VSV, vesicular stomatitis virus, is a nasty bug that hits, you know, primarily livestock. And it's sort of like foot and mouth disease. It's got lots of blisters in the mouth. And they can be so painful that, especially when they pop, I mean, you know what it's like when a blister pops on your
uh-huh.
body. It leaves a very sore spot.
Yeah.
Well, it makes it difficult to eat. And so it's you end up with weight loss and, you know, milk production goes down. Sometimes you'll have aborted fetuses. The interesting thing about this is it is communicable to people.
Mm-hmm.
And in people, it tends to have flu-like symptoms. But you and I have just discovered, we did a little research on
this. Right,
right. And we found out that, you found it.
One of the good resources for this type of research is the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, or CIDRAP, C-I-D-R-A-P, at the University of Minnesota. Their website has a page devoted to this VSV. One of the sections on their page is titled Vesicular Stomatitis as a Biological Weapon.
Uh-huh.
And I quote, VS is considered a suitable agent for a biological weapon for the following reasons. It's easily confused with foot and mouth disease. Substantial direct and indirect economic losses to livestock producers result from an outbreak. And the wide range of possible vectors make the disease difficult to eradicate. Now, again, as Sharon mentioned, it is... It can infect cattle.
Right, and they think that one of the major vectors are insects.
Right, horses and swine. But again, it does it can infect humans. And with a 24 to 48-hour incubation period, it comes on pretty quick.
And I'll tell you what, in humans, it's often misdiagnosed. They just think you've got the flu. Mm-hmm. And if they have married this with a protein or a gene from Marburg, mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Now, I will remind our listeners, I wish I could find this story off the top of my head, but so I think it was before Christmas, Watcher Magazine ran a couple of stories about some cattle that were mysteriously dying over in, I think it was, one of the former USSR nations.
Belarus?
May have been Belarus. They were losing cattle left and right, and it looked like it was foot and mouth. And there were similar problems in another part of the world, and I want to say Mexico, but I'm not sure. But at the time, we even mentioned, was there some sort of a test going on?
Mm-hmm.
So if this does look like foot and mouth, and if this can be used as a biological weapon, then you have to ask yourself, why the heck are they mucking around with it with Marburg?
Yeah.
And what was going on in that country?
Well, yeah, exactly. And it's not... beyond the realm of possibility to ask these questions. I mean, we don't need our tinfoil hats on to ask these questions because it is known. It is public information. It is documented that the United States Army at Fort Detrick was experimenting with Ebola and other similarly nasty viruses as potential weapons, as were the Russians at Vector. Biological weapons research facility where one of their researchers in 2004 accidentally got stuck with a needle and died.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Running with scissors.
They're running with, they're swimming before 30 minutes have elapsed. It is just really, really scary world out there. And this is an area of research that most of us don't know a whole lot about. And there are a few people out there who are trying to sound the alarm saying, hey, they're playing with viruses in less than maximum security, biohazard level 4 laboratories. Mm-hmm. This one apparently was.
It is bio level 4. In fact, it's a joint between the U.S. and Canada.
Yeah. So it is just something we take note of here. And, of course, the use of this virus that can masquerade as other things and is easily transmitted between, you know, cattle and humans and pigs. It's, just raises eyebrows of concern. There is one other story I wanted to get to that we didn't talk about last night before we get to Jay Fields. And this is a really, really disturbing story from Canada. A young man, 23 years old, by the name of Jeremy Allen Steinke, has been arrested along with his 12-year-old girlfriend. That's disturbing enough. Mm-hmm. But the reason they're arrested, they've been charged with the murders of the other three members of the girl's family. Now, her name's being withheld under Canadian law. It can't be released. This is really a gruesome case that's unfolding in southern Alberta. Medicine Hat is the community. But as a parent, it's even more frightening because this 12-year-old girl met this young man through a couple of internet websites, one in particular called vampirefreaks.com. Now, as you can guess, it's a site that is devoted to the goth lifestyle.
Yeah.
She also exchanged a number of emails with other young men at another similar site. I won't mention the name, but one of the posts that was reported kind of raises a red flag as to what was going on inside her. And I quote, I think deep thoughts. I'm quite emotional and my mood is ever changing. Other people live in my head with me. End quote.
Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah.
All our rust is dirt.
Yeah, exactly. That was the thought that came to my mind. And I will put links in the show notes to these articles. It's not the kind of thing I'm raising just because it's a splashy type of story that you see on your typical evening news. It's because of the nature of the two people involved, where they met, and the types of comments that she's making that lead me to believe that there is very definitely a spiritual component to what happened
here. Our teens are so vulnerable. They oftentimes are lonely and will talk to someone, anyone sometimes, who just makes them feel special.
And you can't always tell on the outside what these people are like. Just like the people who are the neighbors of the accused serial killers, you know. Oh, he was always so quiet. Oh, he was such a neighbor.
And by the same token, I have to say this before I forget. Just because someone dresses in the goth style does not mean that that person is of that culture.
No.
There's a big difference. It's like, you know, you say if you put on a Cubs hat, it doesn't mean that you're playing third base.
Right.
We have several kids that go to school with Nicole who dress in that style. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, they are sweet kids. Mm-hmm. They are just like, I mean, they're just wonderful, wonderful young people. And they just like that. I mean, let's face it, there's a store called Hot Topic that sells clothes like that. That is mainstream. And Nicole she makes a great observation. She said, asked a friend one time, well, why do you dress like that? Well, because I want to be different. You buy your clothes at a national chain store.
Yeah, exactly. You can't be different if you're buying clothes that come with a UPC symbol attached to it, you know? There was a store like that in Philadelphia many years ago when I lived there called Zipperhead, which catered to that crowd, too. And again, I had to laugh because they all had the little tags with the little barcodes on it because it's being turned out in a factory in Taiwan.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
So it's not, you're being different everyone else.
Exactly. So we're not saying that, you know, all kids who look like that, oh, beware. In fact, sometimes kids who are really involved in this culture, you can't tell on the surface, as you were saying.
Right.
They may dress totally like you and I.
Right. And that was a point that I was going to make, that neighbors who live next door to this family where this tragedy has taken place commented that they seemed like a very tightly knit family, you know, mother, father, brother, sister. They seemed like a tightly knit family that always went out and did things together. And yet this young lady, this 12-year-old girl and her 23-year-old boyfriend are accused of killing the other three members of her family.
Yeah.
And the neighbors apparently didn't see it coming. They didn't
see it
coming.
This is spiritual warfare.
It is a spiritual war, and I think the sentence, other people live in my head with me, is significant.
Yeah.
It is significant. Now, I don't pretend to have any special discernment in this area, but it just struck me that way and thought we would pass that along just to make you aware of it. And again, as we've talked about before, one of the most disturbing stories that is being pretty much ignored by the mainstream news right now is the incarceration of a woman without her writ of habeas corpus, her rights to be taken to court and the government forced to present evidence as to why she should be held.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that if you're going to spy for a foreign government, you don't write to your cousin who's like the president's best friend and say, by the way, I'm meeting with these guys from Iraq.
And she wrote to President Bush as well.
Mm-hmm. And Jay Fields, who kind of stumbled into this story by renting a basement apartment in her home, has, you know, God bless him, has kind of picked up her tail and is doing his best to let people know about it because, as a patriotic American, this is just not the kind of thing that our forefathers fought for.
No, it isn't. Well, we got part three coming up, so don't go away. Here's part three of our interview with Jay Fields.
We left Susan Lindauer in a mental health institution in Fort Worth, Texas, where she remains today, apparently because she refuses to accept a government-ordered program of medicine, which she believes may render her unable to defend herself in court.
You know, I would argue that she's probably right because, as you know, I used to work in a mental hospital. And a lot of the kids that I worked with, I taught school, and a lot of the kids that I worked with were hardly awake enough to participate in class. Some of them out and out slept through class because they were on such heavy doses of Thorazine.
Wow. Jay, have you had contact with Susan, and do you know whether she's had an opportunity to bring in a doctor for a second opinion?
I know that she hasn't had that opportunity. I know that she has filed a number of briefs or, filings of some sort with the court requesting things like that and proposing different remedies for how she they might work it, something out through her private practice, but it hasn't materialized in anything solid, at least. There is word of a hearing on May 3rd. It'll be a public hearing at the court at 500 Pearl Street in New York City. I think the judge is Judge Mikowski. The word is that they're going to decide on to forcibly medicate her.
Oh.
To forcibly medicate her?
Forcibly medicate her.
So.
And I heard from her this morning, and she was as emotionally distraught as I have ever heard her or seen her. She sounded like she was in tears. That she just felt that all of her efforts to gain justice and to get attention and to work out remedies have just come to nothing, and she's starting to feel herself very defenseless before the force of the government. She thinks that these people are just very evil people from her point of view, and that bothers me a little bit, because I don't think everybody in the world is evil, and I think there's some good government people, as I've already said, and she's losing her ability to trust others, and the government is at some point responsible for her mental health, and putting her in this situation is I don't know what's the word, negligent or it seems criminal to me.
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
I mean, she has not been convicted of anything. They have deprived her of her rights. They've waived her Sixth Amendment rights, and thrown her in a population with people who are criminals. She's been the prison there is run by people whose profession is to deal with criminals. They have no training in how to deal with somebody who's an unconvicted citizen. They treat her the same. They limit her phone privileges, on and on. And frankly, there's probably some people in that prison and in the penal system that are out there to try to train people and rehabilitate people and so on. But some of those people that's the only job they can get,
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also there's a tendency of people who feel so helpless after the World Trade Center bombing themselves to do anything about terrorism, that anybody who looks like they might be a target, we can hit this person because this person represents our enemy. It's like the Stalag 17, the movie years ago where they knew there was somebody that infiltrated them from the Germans, and then this one guy, the suspicion fell on this one person, and everybody beat up on him. And later on, the lead, that senior officer in the Stalag,
mm-hmm.
American officer, approached him and says, "I'm pretty sure you're not the person we're looking for, but your silence in all of this is not helping you any. And don't you know anything about this?" And he says, "Oh yes, I know who the person is that is the real snitch. He's the person that hit me the hardest."
That is a profound statement. Well,
it was a good movie.
here's something that I don't quite get. Her public defender is in New York.
Right.
And she's
indicted
in Texas.
In court in New York, federal court in New York.
And she's in Texas. Why didn't they put her in an institution in New York?
She told me that they didn't think that there was any other place in the penal system suitable for dealing with women in her condition.
Really?
That seems really fishy.
Now, what kind of an institution is this place in Fort Worth, Texas?
It's a federal medical center inside a penitentiary, Carswell. I researched it before she went, and I feel a little guilty here because in my research it said that this was run by Naval Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And my experiences with people, Naval doctors and such that I hold them in very high esteem, and I thought she would be in good hands, and it should be in the hands of professionals who might actually do her some good. There's room for improvement in the best of us.
Why did she have to be in a prison, though? I understand she had been arrested, but she was out on bail, right?
Right. Well, that's
so why
question.
Couldn't they have put her into a New York mental institution?
Or it needed to be federal. I think it was a federal issue. But I think they could have also outsourced this to some private observation.
What they've done is they've made it very, very difficult for her public defender, who's getting practically nothing for doing this, to fly to Texas all the time to meet with her.
I don't think he's flown to Texas once.
That's my point.
Yeah.
If she were in New York, he'd be able to go see her.
Now, let me tell you the story also of her uncle, who flew to see her, and twice was turned away during visitor's hours.
Really? During visitor's hours? On what grounds?
Once was they told him, well, you didn't come here at the right time, and he had. The second time they said, well, we were required to have a monitor, and that person is unavailable, so you can't see her. And actually, to his credit, the uncle told me that when the judge, well, maybe I didn't hear this directly from the uncle, but the word I heard was that the judge heard about this and was outraged, and the third time sent the federal marshals with the uncle so that the uncle was guaranteed to see her.
Well, I'm glad to hear that at least.
Yeah, so this is an interesting case.
Well, this is interesting is one word, but I mean, it's disturbing. This almost sounds like the plot of a really horrible movie. I mean,
yeah.
just a nightmare.
Just a symphony of errors.
Well,
and people, who knows what's going on in the minds of people out in that place in New York. Maybe there was some requirement because she was indicted under the Patriot Act that conversations be monitored by somebody that had, you know, special training, and they only had one or two of those, and they didn't have enough. Maybe, you know, it could be that there's, you know, people not knowing how to respond and not knowing what they can tell a visitor and what they can't. And, you know, I can see some issues of training and confidence coming to bear on this.
Okay.
But at some point you start to wonder, you know, how much of this is a cultural thing the prosecutor wanted her in New York for a reason, and maybe they have lots of friends in the prison there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was that bad, well, then I guess the question would be, is have they been medicating her? Have they been putting things in her food already? My impression is that they have not. That this is on the up and up. They wouldn't be making such a case out of it if, in other words, I think there's probably some doctors that want to have the right signatures on the right line before they do anything.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah,
but that can also slow things down.
It can. She could easily be in there for a long, long time.
Yeah, well, I've been told that by I ride a motorcycle, and at the dealership I bumped into a lawyer. He said, oh, yeah, she could be in there for the next 5 years. There's no requirement to let her out at all.
And that,
I don't know.
Boy, that is really ugly. Well, especially when you consider it in light of what happened to Jose Padilla. Now, he may well be a bad guy. I don't know. But because the president determined that Padilla, an American citizen, was an enemy of the state, actively collaborating with enemies of the American state, that he could be locked up in solitary confinement in a military brig indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent over 3 years in solitary.
And they finally had to charge him with something.
Right, finally charged him with something just ahead of the Supreme Court hearing his appeal. And, of course, then he lost the appeal because, well, he'd been charged by then. So kind of a delaying tactic. When you look at that case and then you look at what's happening with Susan, where she's been declared incompetent and shipped off to a mental institution half a country away and is being held now beyond her release date with no target date for releasing her in sight unless she agrees to start taking these drugs, it really doesn't paint a very pretty picture of what's going on here.
Yeah, it seems to me that basic fairness, it requires at least that she have the opportunity to find her own medical opinion and present that contrary opinion. I mean, right now the only people she's talked to of any stature in the medical profession have been people paid by the prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
And does the prosecution get to have its way when it comes to mental health?
They shouldn't. Her public defender should be insisting that he be able to present a doctor's opinion as well.
Absolutely. And there should be, you know, a hearing with whatever witnesses she needs to assert that you know, there are people out there who can say, yeah, we've seen her sitting with Dr. Fuse at lunch. Those people should be allowed to come forward and say, no, this isn't delusional. It's a matter of it's on record, and you know, whoever, you know. Now, another couple points here from my point of view is I look at this kind of as a citizen and say, well, what does this mean to me? You know, what is, if they can do this to her, what does it mean to me? What
exactly.
It, or what does it mean to my nieces and nephews who are going to be here, you know, after I'm gone and their children, you know? The World Trade Center, as bad as it was, may not have been as bad as our response to it. We lost, you know, 2,000, 3,000 lives. I don't know the exact number.
Mm-hmm. Almost 3,000.
It was done only by 15 people, by the way. This wasn't an invading army. This was 15 lunatics. But so we bury our dead. We clean the rubble. We heal as best we can, and we go on. Civilization goes forward. But when we change the rights and how we conduct our government, there is something there that is indelible that also affects future generations. I mean, mm-hmm. these are things that people took centuries to get civilization to the point where we had a government that considered these rights important at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, habeas corpus, heck, that goes back to Magna Carta.
Mm-hmm. That's
we
right.
suspended it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are principles of civilization. It's not just America. I mean, this is the sort of thing that the whole world looks at and says, and has an interest in saying, what is it you're doing here? Mm-hmm. And I think we need to be able to be able to say that we're doing our best. And I don't think we are. I think we are responding in fear. And I think I think our leaders are responding in fear
mm-hmm.
simply because they don't know what else to do.
Well, I think that they're trying very hard to whip up fear amongst the people of the United States. If you and I and Derek stay fearful all the time, we're more easily led.
That's true. This administration has had a great history of pressing the panic button.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And saying, oh, there's something that might be embarrassing to us. Everybody, heads under the desk, don't look, you know. And you know, that's the 1984 book
mm-hmm.
that the politicians were bombing each other's countries just to protect their political interests, you know, creating hysteria. And it's like they were in an agreement with each other to kind of randomly bomb cities just so that there was a state of emergency that justified the elimination of civil liberties.
Well, you know, regardless of what Susan Lindauer's real activities were, it doesn't really matter. I mean, she deserves a day in court, just as Jose Padilla does, just as anyone who is arrested, either in a hometown or by the federal government, you deserve your day in court. That's one of it's the backbone of the American way of life.
Right.
And with competent representation, too.
Yeah, exactly.
And how about the right for a speedy trial?
Yes.
We've lost that long ago to almost everybody.
I'm sorry. Okay.
I know. I totally agree.
I know. I'm
We're
kind
supposed
of an
to get a speedy court. Bless your heart. You know what? We need more of you. We need more idealists.
What I can't understand is now this is a slightly different topic, but you hear the administration criticizing activist judges.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I cannot understand how the Republican Party lets them get away with that. I mean. Because the role of the judiciary is to protect the Bill of Rights, and the Bill of Rights protects the interests of the rich as well as the poor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the Bill of Rights that protects the property rights of the rich from all the liberals who would hand them out, if you want to look at it in that vein.
Mm-hmm.
I think what it comes down to, as I observe it, is any quote-unquote activist judge who makes a ruling that is contrary to the goals of a particular party is evil.
Yeah.
But if
his
or her decision is in favor of the goals of the particular party, oh, hey, we're all in favor of that.
Yeah, not activism, by the way.
No.
Oh,
no. No. And getting back to Padilla, it's interesting that his case did not reach the Supreme Court until after we'd had the little shuffle there with the two new judges, justices seated on the bench.
Mm-hmm, that is a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what can we do to help Susan? Pray for her unnaturally? Is there something
absolutely.
We can address
I think,
or can
I
write
think
to?
I think it's worth writing all of our representatives, our senators, and convincing them that even though she may be just a citizen of Maryland, that there is a public interest in the right things being done, and that her rights being protected and observed, And that we don't hurry to the gallows just because we've been punched in the knees, you know. We're mm-hmm. a great country. As horrible as 9/11 was, we are so much greater.
Well said.
We don't need to, you know, this idea of grandmothers taking off their shoes to go through the radar or the X-ray machines or the whatever they are at the airports, the metal detectors. We're afraid of grandmothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, but if you ask a Middle Eastern man to take off his shoes, that's profiling.
I got my problems with that. I mean, I'm with that attitude that you can't, you know. Sorry, you fit the statistical model, and maybe that's another form of tyranny, but...
Look, we've got several police officers in our families, and we totally agree with that. If you fit the profile, you have to take a look at that person.
Yeah, and some of this goes to, you know, families. How do you raise your children, you know? If you didn't raise the first one right, we're going to take a closer look at the second one.
Mm.
Okay, neighborhood. How do you clean your streets? How do you... You know, educate, you know, community. How do you educate your children? What sacrifices do you make for the betterment of your children? What, you know, and there comes a point where you start to examine civilizations in terms of, are they doing things that are constructive and improve the lives of their people in future generations, or are we a bunch of corrupt people who are padding our own bank accounts and taking vacations to the Riviera, you know, or wherever?
Mm-hmm. We've got ourselves into a situation where the two main political parties are no longer arguing about more government services. I could use the word intervention, but we'll say services. More government services to help people versus more less dependence upon government, to where Republican and Democrat are now just arguing over how to use the government to run our lives.
Mm-hmm.
There's no longer a consideration of how to reduce the size of government and increase personal liberties. And Susan Lindauer's case, I think, is a bellwether and needs to be made more public. She is in danger, it seems to me, as one looking from outside, she is in danger of sort of disappearing down the memory hole.
Mm-hmm.
And the significance of what's happening to her, where a government can just say, well, we find you not competent to stand trial, and therefore you're never going to get a trial. That may not be exactly the way things were intended to happen, mm-hmm. but that may be the net result. If that can happen to Susan Lindauer, Jay, it could happen to you, it could happen to us, it could happen to anyone.
Especially if it's just a judge on the prosecution side who says, okay, we're going to go by the prosecution, the doctor, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's all you get.
Yeah.
Yep, that's...
Janet Phelan was the person who kind of connected me up with you, and she has some concerns along those lines as well.
Absolutely.
There's, in my mind, some question about... Janet points out that what's happening is the government has the ability to seize on any one of your personality traits and say, well, this is abnormal, call you insane, and then victimize you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? My problem with that is, you know, since when do we let the government become the only arbitrator of what mental health is? That's really scary. That to me is worse than allowing the government to establish a religion.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But not very much different.
Well, and there are some, there's been some trial balloons floated along those lines in states where children are being screened for mental health.
Right.
And there was a recommendation written by a presidential panel a couple of years ago to make that a national program where all school children would have to undergo a mental health screen.
Oh boy.
By government-appointed mental health professionals, which would essentially set that program up, Jay, on a national basis.
Mm-hmm.
And that is terrifying.
That's a bureaucracy. When you understand how government programs are run, having a bureaucracy that's going to determine what appropriate mental health is in children, that's huge. That's a major tyranny. Gosh, I mean, who would want to be a child in a school in that country?
Who would have thought 20 years ago we'd be talking about that sort of attitude here in the United States?
You know, some of it, though, frankly, is population density. going back to the political science of this, if you read Brave New World, Aldous Huxley wrote a subsequent book, Brave New World Revisited. It's a very thin book, quick reading. It's a great read where I think about 12 years later, he goes back and talks about the principles of political science that he was writing about in Brave New World. And one of the things he didn't have the benefit of in his thinking then was the fact that we do have computers and the Internet to help us deal with complexity. But he was saying that just population density would prompt people to give up more and more of their civil liberties for protections, for security, and the assurance that they aren't going to starve.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably true, because as we become more and more populous, we rely more and more on the government to give us our daily share of, you know, the necessities of life. We have to have our electricity. You have to give us our heat. You have to give us the grocery store on the corner. We've got to have the gas, you know, station up on the corner so I can go to work. Whereas 100 years ago, or even, frankly, when I grew up, and a lot of our listeners know this, I grew up in a farm, and we were pretty self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are skills that that have been lost, and That's a whole other show.
It is indeed. Well, you know what? We have taken up so much of your time today, and we would love to have you back to talk more about this if you would agree to that.
Oh, yeah. So there's going to be a hearing on May 3rd. I also suggest that people might contact their local media, press, and people, you know, magazines they're reading, they think should get involved, ACLU, if you're a member. I've written a number of those organizations without much response.
I'm surprised the ACLU isn't all over this.
Pardon?
I'm surprised the ACLU isn't all over this.
Well, Susan is kind of a third rail in one respect. Right after she was arrested, the Republicans, the conservatives, did try to use her as an indictment of liberals.
Mm-hmm.
So a liberal coming to her aid, you know, there's the notion of, well, what did she really do that we don't know about, and can we then be tarred with that brush?
Yeah, exactly. It's politics again. Yeah, you can just imagine Sean Hannity going off on.
Oh, I can.
Yeah.
I can. Well.
Yeah.
Well, Jay Fields, we appreciate you filling us in on the situation, and we will stay in touch so that we can stay informed and keep our listeners informed as to what's happening with Susan's case, because, again, she is one person, but it's a case that has a lot of significance for the way the government addresses any of us in any future dealings that we might have with the law. So, yeah. Jay, we thank you, and we appreciate your time, and we look forward to talking to you again on PID Radio.
Well, that wraps it up for now with Jay Fields, but as we said earlier, we are definitely going to revisit this issue in a couple of weeks and see exactly what's happening with her.
Maybe as early as next week when they have the hearing to determine her state of mental health.
Yeah, and we've got lots going on next month. It's Prophecy Month. We're going to be exploring lots and lots of end-time issues as we approach the June 6th of 06 date.
Mm-hmm. 6606, yes. We're lining up some really interesting thinkers who have put a lot of research into the prophecies of, in contained within the Bible, and it really is a fascinating topic of study. It can be intimidating because there are so many layers there that you feel like you can get lost on it. But we'll try to take it a little bit at a time, and we will. Yeah, I think we've got some people lined up who can explain their positions very well.
I think so, too. And frankly, if you had them all in the same room, they wouldn't necessarily agree with each other and everything. But that's the nature of this sort of subject. In fact, there are many issues with regard to Christianity that even the apostles didn't agree with each other on. So I think that's okay, as long as we agree on the main stuff.
Exactly. So we see as through a glass darkly, and we'll try to just shine a little bit of light, maybe scrub off a little of the grime from the glass next month as we lead up to 6-6 of 06 and beyond.
I sometimes shave my head in a glass darkly. No, it's growing. It's slowly getting there. It's heading up to an inch long now. We're going to be meeting a couple of friends on Saturday, some people who listened to our show and wrote to us and said they were coming to the area. So we're going to meet them for an early supper, late lunch.
Mm-hmm.
If you're ever in the area, Mm-hmm. We are very serious when we say this. Let us know you're coming because we would love to meet you.
Absolutely. So that email address for that kind of information or guest suggestions, ideas, questions for us or what have you.
Radio. Recipes, hairdo, ideas.
That's right. Dog training suggestions. Radio at peeringintodarkness.com.
And you can always join the forum at peeringintodarkness.com/forum. Well, as I say, we got lots of things lined up for next month. You don't want to miss that. So prepare to listen to PID many times. We may even have extra innings.
That's right. That's right. And tomorrow night, of course, we will wrap up the news events of the week. There are still more things that we want to talk about, but we want to try to keep these programs to a reasonable, manageable length. So tomorrow we'll kind of cover a lot of ground as far as the news is concerned. And as always, links to the articles we discuss and guest websites will be in the show notes at PIDradio.com.
Also, the ISP service is still sort of on and off here, but they're coming to fix it on Monday.
Yes.
Yes. Will you please lay hands on our cable and pray for it?
Until tomorrow night, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody. Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it loud.